Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Devon Insight Speaker Seminar for September. I'm your host, Graham Flynn, Chief Executive of Devon Insight. Formerly known as St Dunstan's, Blind Veterans UK has been helping those who have served their country to rebuild their lives after sight loss for over 100 years. Our guest speaker today is Aaron Garant, who is the Community Team Leader for Blind Veterans UK. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Graham. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I suppose we should start with a little history of Blind Veterans UK because many people may know it from its original name.
Absolutely, yeah. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for having me along and to talk about Blind Veterans, which is something that's really close to my heart, very passionate about the charity. So, yeah, as you say, Blind Veterans was founded in 1915 by a chap called Sir Arthur Pearson. Originally known as the long title of Blinded Soldiers and Sailors Care Committee, or it was most commonly known as St Dunstan's, which was originally a nickname but then became our official name. So just to give you a little bit about Sir Arthur Pearson was a successful proprietor of a number of magazines and newspapers, which included The Standard. When he began to lose his sight as a result of glaucoma in 1910. He was actually 44 at the time. He was such a man that wasn't going to be beaten by such a disability. So he immediately set out to make it his mission to discover the possibilities and opportunities open to the blind. And so by 1912, he'd become president of the National Institute of the Blind. Originally, as you say, we have a history going back over 100 years. So our original aim was to provide rehabilitation, training, lifelong support to those who were blinded in the First World War. So as you can imagine, the chaps that were coming out of the trenches and feeling the effects of the gases that they were using at the time. In March 1915, we moved to a new premises in London, in Regent's Park. At first, there was just 16 men there, and they were admitted. But such was the number of men that were coming back from the First World War in the trenches with their sight problems, that by the end of the first year, over 1,500 men had been in residence. So the St Dunstan's Hostel for Blinded Soldiers and Sailors offered a detailed programme of care, guidance, training for those men that had lost their sight as a result of war. If I tell you a little bit about what they did there. So a variety of lots of different things. It was really to make them feel as if they were a contribution back to society again, living as normal life as possible, and to give them those skills and those trades and those experiences that you would have despite having that disability. So they could learn a number of different trades, which included things like basket making, mat making, carpentry, boot repairing, all sorts of things. There was even a model farm where poultry farming skills were acquired. And in another classroom, massage was taught. Others were trained in shorthand typing, telephone operators, really sort of key roles that were back in that time, in that history. There was even a successful rowing team, and they did all sorts of things like dancing, singing. There was a real sort of like sense of community within the lodge in Regent's Park. So that's really a plotted history of when we were St Dunstan's. Graham, do you want me to talk about when we became Blind Veterans then, onto that bit, or did you need any more about the history of St Dunstan's?
I'm going to share a story with you, first of all.
Okay,
which is the fact that my grandfather, Ernie Flynn, was a St Dunstaner. He fought in World War II, and he fought for 100 days exactly before they found out his true age and sent him back to Blighty. And then as soon as he was 18, he was sent back where he was shot, and he lost much of his sight. So you go through many years. I obviously grew up in the late 60s and 70s, and I remember him sitting in the corner of the room in an armchair, and he described his sight loss as being like looking down a pencil with the lead having been removed.
Right.
And I suppose that was my first introduction to sight loss as a little kid, looking at this old man in the corner of a room. But I'll be forever grateful because St Dunstan supported my grandparents with a bungalow all of their lives. I'm sure you don't do that now, but in those days, very, very well looked after. Literally for life, which I'm very grateful for. Go on, you could tell me a bit about Blind Veterans UK now.
And you really just touched it there, actually. The it was victory over blindness, and that was actually Sir Arthur Pearson's mission, his book that he wrote as well, and it was really providing that lifelong support, as you said there. And actually, interestingly, we do still have some properties that some of our members do live in. It's not as it was in the past, but we still do have a stock of properties around the country. So fast forwarding a little bit. So in 2012, St Dunstan's became known as Blind Veterans UK. We changed our name really to fit in with the sight loss sector to better explain what we do, really. Lots of people still know us as St Dunstan's, still refer to us as St Dunstan's, and we'd never want to go away completely from that rich history. But we've supported people through obviously all the conflicts, the major conflicts, and national service veterans coming out into the 60s. But in 2012, we became Blind Veterans UK, and our motto, which is one that Sir Arthur would really have approved from, which was Life Beyond Sight Loss. So we've supported tens of thousands of armed forces and national service veterans to rebuild their lives after sight loss. If anybody has ever had the chance to be in a Manchester Piccadilly station, have a look out for the statue that's just outside the entrance. It's a beautiful statue, but it shows the image that everybody thinks of the First World War, of the chaps coming out of the trench with their hands on each other's shoulders, guiding each other. And really, that is just in one image that describes who we were there to support originally, and we still are. Blind Veterans UK, our patron is Sophie, Duchess of Edinburgh now, and we're a national charity covering all of the UK, so all of the devolved nations, even cover Jersey and Guernsey on the Channel Islands. And I'd say nationally we have around about 4,000 members. We refer to our service units as members because they are really a member of something as important as blind veterans as a family. We still continue to support people that are visually impaired, regardless of how they lost their sight. Originally, it was through active service or through warfare. But now it's through sight loss conditions such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, injury, and as I say, whether that's a result of their active service or after they've left the armed forces. So that kind of brings us up to date. We have two centres, rehabilitation and wellbeing centres. One in Llandudno in North Wales, which has been there for some time now, and we're just in the process of moving our other one from Brighton, which was, I think it was in the 1940s that we opened that, but now we're moving that to Rustington, so just 25 miles down the coast, but still on the south coast, which is where a lot of our members go to receive some training or a holiday. Get involved in all sorts of activities. We do wellbeing programs there, so it's looking at maybe things like how they're sleeping, how their mental health is around their sight loss journey, and what we can do to help them, and really sort of like start that acceptance of sight loss by giving them the skills to be able to overcome sight loss. So what do? We help veterans to learn vital life skills and help them with the tools they need to be safe in their own homes. We do this by giving veterans free of rehabilitation, training and support, whatever they need really to live independent lives, both within the community, so within their own local areas, and also, as I mentioned, at the two centres. So we teach things such as independent life skills, IT, tech training. We provide all sorts of bits of equipment, and as you can imagine, that's constantly changing and evolving. So it's really trying to find that piece of equipment that might be suitable for that person. Everybody's different. It's not one size fits all. We teach vocational skills. We re-engage members with clubs, activities, hobbies, except, you know, things that they haven't been involved with for some time. So it's really trying to retain that ethos that we originally had from when we were first formed, which is trying to get people back into as much normal life as possible to continue doing the things that they love and they enjoy doing. So that is a little bit of information about where we are as blind veterans. Anything else you want me to add, Graham, at all?
I will. I'll ask you a few more questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Yeah.
The first one is, how did you find yourself working for Blind Vets?
Me personally, I've been in the charity sector now for around about 8 years. Before that, I was a police officer in Northamptonshire, and I did that for just under 10 years. Really joined the police to try to make a difference and try and help people to following, you know, things like awful crimes that may have been committed to, against them. My time in the police, I was a response officer, just dealing with emergency calls, and then went into CID to become detective for the last couple of years of my service. But I really wanted to get back to really helping people, so I then left the police and joined victim support, which was very linked to what I was doing within the police. It was a short contracts, which I then stumbled upon blind veterans, and everything about the charity really appealed to me. I'm not military myself, I'm not a veteran myself, but I think with being in the blue light services, being in the police, I understand that world, and I know it's very different between the blue light services and the military, but I understand that level of discipline and camaraderie between the officers and the personnel. Blind veterans just really appealed to me, and I've been there now for 5.5 years or so, and absolutely love it.
Excellent. Yeah, well, as you know, we share almost an identical history, because
absolutely.
I was a police officer in Devon and Cornwall. Mm-hmm. I too was a response officer, then went into CID a bit quicker than you, but I ended up on major crime. And I think the general public really appreciates some of the horrific stuff that you deal with as a policeman.
Absolutely.
And you get very touched by not just the victims of the crime, but the wider circle of people, family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an empathy there, and I think there is a shared empathy between the blue light services and the police, which leads me to my next question, really. It's a bit of clarity about who can access your services.
Yes. Okay. So we support military veterans. So that's anybody that was in Army, Navy, Air Force, whether that's a regular or reservist or territorial, as it once was called. includes, I touched on it previously, but includes National Service veterans as well. So regardless of how long you've actually served within the military, and whichever branch of military, you will be eligible for our support from so those two criteria, so the military side of things, but also then sight loss criteria. And actually, we've recently lowered that and made it a little bit easier for people to become members. It's very technical, but it's it has to be sight loss in both eyes. A minimum of 660 in one and 624 in the other. But all I would say on that is there's an eligibility checker that's actually available online. Best thing is, if you're suffering with sight loss and you're a military veteran, please go online, put your details in, apply, and it could be that you may not be eligible under our sight loss criteria at that stage, but we do review those membership applications every year, and it could be that in the future you may need our support and you may then qualify. So it's always worth, if you're having sight problems, please just bear us in mind, put an application in, and we'll work with you. It's a free service, you don't have to pay a penny, and it's, as we've said before, it's lifelong. People that would qualify would be anybody that sadly lost their sight through active service within the blue light services. So that's obviously police, paramedics, fire service. If you've lost, you know, through a tragic event within the service, then you would also qualify for our support.
Fantastic. Let's move on to the wonderful word COVID, COVID-19.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Which I think had a obviously a very negative effect on society.
Mm.
But also, a lot of charities are reporting that it actually became a catalyst for change. And development of services. I just wondered what services you now do remotely or whatever that have been basically catalyzed by the COVID outbreak.
Yeah. So as you say, it was an awful time, and sadly we lost friends and loved ones through that time. It did give us almost like that catalyst to look at how we deliver our services. So obviously during the lockdowns, we couldn't go out and see people, which is something that we pride ourselves on doing, going out and actually seeing the members within their own homes to support them, to see how they live on a day-to-day basis. So we came up with the next best thing, which was to be able to speak to them via the phone. Okay, it's not the same. It's not the same as actually seeing someone in the flesh. But at least you can get an idea of how they're doing, and we certainly found that during the COVID times. So that's something that we were almost forced into doing. It became very successful. People loved a call every now and again, whether it was every 2 weeks, depending on that person, or whether it was just a check-in every now and again. It was really sort of driven by them. But we did actually run some telephone support groups as well. So we had all sorts of things like quiz groups, just social chatting. And we've got two very successful ones that have continued past the COVID times, which is our quiz groups, which we've just actually written an article about it, because the quiz group are, the majority of them that ring in, they're over 100 years old. So I think the combined age is at 390 odd. It's I think the baby of the group is in his early 90s. So it's a remarkable group that's been going since COVID times, but has continued on afterwards. We've also got a virtual STEPS group, which is a group of our members. We've issued them with pedometers. They measure their steps through those pedometers, and they ring in and have a social chat and pass on the number of steps every week. and basically we've plotted them all the way around things like the Southwest Coastal Path, all the way around the coast of Wales. I think they've even done Land's End to John O'Groats, virtually, of course, but it's with the thought that actually trying to keep people active and moving, and give them that purpose to keep moving, because it becomes a bit of a competition as well. We have retained, now that we're able to go back out and see people in their own homes, but we have retained that element of remote working. We do some of our rehab work as well by remote means, so it might be a little bit of training over the phone. It could be that we can do an assessment on something quite simple, like a low vision assessment over the telephone. Send out the charts to the member, and then work out what's best for a piece of equipment. As I said, nothing beats getting out and speaking to people face to face and doing that person contact. But some of our services can be run over the telephone, but we do like to get out and see people.
I think we're in exactly the same situation, Aaron. We operate obviously within the county of Devonshire. God, that makes me sound like an old English laddie. Devonshire. But Devonshire is, of course, the third largest county in the country. For us, if somebody goes out and sees somebody in Barnstable for, say, an hour's visit, you're taking that person out of operation for a whole day.
Yeah. That's right.
And what we've tried to do with our speaker events, which we're doing here today, our weekly chit-chat calls, is to get that contact with people and camaraderie and shared experience. Mm-hmm. Because for me, it's people sharing their stories and what works for them that works really well.
Yeah,
the other
absolutely.
Thing is when we're looking at meeting people and sharing equipment and stuff, we've been running in community events. And last year we had a little dollop of funding from Devon County Council, and we managed to get to people in South Moulton and Kingsbridge. Mm. And again, they're good because you've got people coming from very remote areas, which is lovely and also cost effective, because cost money is the big challenge for all charities, of course.
Absolutely.
And like you, our services are free, and that money has to come from somewhere.
Absolutely, and it's how you use that money in the most effective way to put the person first, isn't it? Put the service user or a member first, and not spend money unnecessarily where you can do it a little bit smarter, a little bit better.
I think there was something you said earlier about rehabilitation, which again was there was a synergy with what we do. We don't put everybody on the same path. What we do is we have a sort of individually tailored, bespoke support service. Mm-hmm. And that's really important, and that's important to get across to people. This journey is not the same for everybody. I was very surprised when I first joined the sector that there are some people who use the level of their sight loss almost as a weapon. I'm blinder than you, which really surprised me. You know, everybody deserves our support, whether it be somebody very early in that journey, just not knowing who to turn to those who are old hands. I mean, we've got some clients who have been with us for many, many years. David, who's one of our regulars on these calls, I think he was saying last week about 20 years he's been with our charity, which is fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so you're assessing people in a similar way, I suppose, to the sensory team, the local authority sensory team.
Yes.
When we look at what you're assessing, it says here, you're making the best use of your remaining sight. We did a similar thing. Mobility, training, getting people out and about again, really important.
Yeah.
Learning independent living skills, so I assume that's your cooking and washing and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, those techniques,
And the thing that I think is really important is about staying connected with loved ones and with other people with sight loss, that peer support. And you do that as well, so it's lovely.
We do,
really.
Yeah. You said it just there, but it's very person-centered. One size doesn't fit all. It's trying to find that piece of equipment, which could be a very simple, very cheap piece of equipment, such as a liquid level indicator, which has dramatically changed that person's life, to be able to make a cup of tea again. Or it could be a very expensive thing like a read easy or some kind of scanner which will read documents. It's really working out with that person what is best for them to assist them to live independently. And trying where we can do that in their own home to see what else is going on there, see what else we can help with. Obviously, we can't do it all. That's why we work very closely with likes of yourselves, the Sensory team, other military charities, to really put that support in place for that person. And we like to think that we've got good contacts around the sector to be able to signpost if need be, to find what's right for that person.
Let's talk a bit about.
No, so I was going to say, you touched on it there about the connection between people. We know that, talking about the COVID times again, the big thing that was reported back was the loneliness and isolation. That's true even coming out of COVID as well. It's important to keep people connected. We have things like coffee mornings. We're in the process as a team to try and work out what kind of social events we can put on as well. It's just trying to get people involved and connected with people that might be going through a similar journey as themselves, so that they realise they're not alone. They've got others that can help or talk to, and ourselves to be there to help them out as well.
One of the really interesting things we noticed about COVID, as you say, very, very tragic time. I lost my sister-in-law to COVID very early on in the pandemic.
Yeah.
We found that for many years we've been sharing information about assistive technology, and there's been a resistance from some of our older clients, members. Mm-hmm. What we did find is that with COVID, more people became less resistant to using technology and started to embrace it a little bit more. And even if it's using the telephone, I mean, I think that the warmth of having a discussion like this, sitting in your armchair at home, not having to tackle street furniture and getting the bus and all that sort of stuff. To me, I love the fact that we've got people who engage with us now, who are housebound, who never came to our community events.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's really, really special. And
it is.
You know, we find it quite emotional here sometimes. We listen to the calls and the things that people talk about. And we come off the calls and we sit down and we go, God, that was amazing. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Where else
would
this have happened?
Absolutely. Yeah, just talking about the quiz group that I talked about earlier and the steps group that are connected in that way. They're spread out across the county, and as you pointed out, Devon is such a huge area that we couldn't possibly get out and get them together. So what's the next best thing? And those groups have just evolved and become, I'd say they've become very close and friends, actually, even though they've probably never met each other. But you're absolutely right. The one good thing that came out of COVID, I guess, would be the increase in this kind of method of communication, to be able to use technology to be able to contact people that you wouldn't normally talk to. And yeah, it has been a huge increase in requests from our membership of people that want to try it now, whether that's a synaptic tablet or a phone or get them connected via Teams or Zoom or whatever method it would be. They're more open to learning about this, because that is the way that the world's going, isn't it? There's more digital needs now, isn't there? Everything's automated banks closing, etc. So it's more important for people to be involved in this kind of thing.
Let's talk a bit about health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And this could be a delicate area. It really can. We like you take a holistic approach to caring for your blind veterans. Mm-hmm. We talk about physical health. So that might be things like smoking cessation, limiting mm-hmm. your alcohol, getting a bit more exercise. It was really interesting looking at some of the, what we would call well-being, but mental health services that you offer as well. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking about mindfulness, sleep hygiene, therapeutic arts and activities. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Okay, I think it was born out of COVID. We started doing what's called our NCP, which was our National Creative Project, which was set up, I think it was delivered by the centres to start with, and it would be all sorts of projects that our members could get involved with, whether it was crafts, woodwork, gardening. I think they had a couple of seedlings that they were posted out, and they could grow themselves. There was an instruction manual that came with it. But we've seen some remarkable results from our members that have engaged in this National Creative and Wellbeing Project. I've got one particular member who has been involved in all of the craft projects and woodwork, made things like the St. Paul's Cathedral. There was a pack that they could put together where there was lots, you know, there was instructions on there. Very challenging, might need some help at times, but really engaged with that challenge and found it something really quite therapeutic to get involved with, but also then have the opportunity to speak to others about it. So that one particular member of ours, he comes along to welcome our new members into the charity when we can do a face-to-face or remote support for people, and talks about his journey with the charity and very much about the projects that he's been involved in. But you're absolutely right, things like well-being, support, chair-based exercises, a bit of help, a bit of advice on health, nutrition, smoking, sleep therapy, that kind of thing, we can assist with. A lot of that's done at our centres, and I think there's some groups that can be run to support people with that. But it's really, for our membership, We'll identify a challenge or an issue that person wants some help with, and we'll do our best to support them to be given the tools and techniques to overcome that challenge. As I said, all the way through this, it's very person-centred, and whatever they come with, we'll do our best to try and sort that out for them, or to at least help them towards sorting that out.
Okay, I've got one more question before we open up the call for questions. It's a sad fact of life that your client demographic has changed over the years with fewer veterans mm-hmm. from World War II.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
With us being in the police in the 80s and 90s, I suppose, we worked with guys who'd left the military, so Northern Ireland, some mm-hmm. of them had been in the Gulf War, Falklands. And now we've got Afghanistan and Iraq. Is there a commonality between the experiences that people have had in each of these conflicts, or is it different?
I think there's a commonality in terms of they fought for our country, and they have that connection to the country and to the military. I guess every service person's experience is very different. It could be that one person saw active service or went to war, whereas another may not have. So there's that difference in that sense. But definitely that camaraderie and that connection through the military and the banter that goes with that between the three services is quite entertaining at times to see.
Yeah.
It's, there's a lot of banter between them, which is a healthy banter, of course. But it's always good to see. But yeah, you're absolutely right with the our membership is declining, sadly. A lot of our veterans come from National Service Days, and obviously that finished in 1963. So it's those people are now passing away, sadly, or getting much older. It's about how we get out there, raise awareness of what we do to help as many people as possible, but to be there and ready for anything that may happen in the future. If there's any, we don't like to talk about it, but if there's ever any future conflicts, we're ready and able to be involved to support people that may be affected by that. It's a case of having to review and adapt for the future with whatever we're faced with.
And Aaron, I suppose your client group, like ours, it's not just about the sight loss. We've got people who are presenting with other complex needs, whether that be physical disabilities.
Yeah.
It's very, very complex.
Absolutely. Often the sight loss isn't the most important thing to that person.
Yeah.
It could be that they've accepted their sight loss, and it's just one of those things that they just have to get on with and they deal with. Whereas it could be another issue that they've got, such as a dementia or health concerns, that is their most pressing issue. So we have to be ready to be able to support people with a variety of different problems and conditions. Deaf blindness is one big thing at the moment, and we try and help out where we can. We've got a very good link with Deafblind UK, to be able to get some sort of joint support going on there. But it's really linking in with other charities that might have that expertise, but also have an understanding of it ourselves to be able to support our membership.
Aaron, that's fantastic. I'm hoping Jenny's listening in, and she's going to do a bit of jiggery-pokery and unmute everybody.
Okay.
Are you there, Jenny?
Yes, I am, and I'm
jiggery pokery.
Yes, I'm doing jiggery pokery right now.
Excellent.
I've got images of Jenny now doing jiggery pokery, but yeah, there we are.
this is what it's like working here, jiggery pokery.
All done.
So, all done, thank you. I'd now like to invite those people who are listening to ask their questions of Aaron. Who would like to start, please?
Could I start? Graham, it's David here from Exmouth.
Welcome, David. Ask away.
Well, hello and good morning to Aaron. I think you're doing a marvellous job with the blind vets.
Good morning. Thank you, David. Thank you. Appreciate that.
But your actual charity, I wouldn't say is that dissimilar to the Devon Insight, you know, with all the work and things you do for visually impaired people.
Yes. You know,
I haven't really got a question for you, but you've totally enlightened me about the Blind Vets UK. Uh-huh. I had a father and a stepfather that are both in the armed forces. My father was Royal Navy. Uh-huh. I've got a stepfather, Wally. He was one of the desert rats out in North Africa. Uh-huh. They've both passed away now, obviously.
Yeah.
No, it's not a question, but you've enlightened us so much about the work you do.
Thank you, David.
And it's wonderful to hear you, and a very good talk. I mean, what I've done now with my life, since I've lost it a long time ago now, 28 years ago, I was registered blind. I'm what they call now severely sight impaired. But I channel all my work and spare time into guide dogs. I've got a lovely dog. He's 8.5 years. He's 10 now. I've had him 8.5 years. He's over 10 now. But I devote all my time to collecting money and going into schools and businesses, etc., doing talks for guide dogs to teach people, you know, to educate what the site's all about. I mean,
absolutely.
I was finished up until 28 years ago, and I lost it suddenly working in Pakistan with a tropical virus I had. And okay. It's short, you know, a very short, unregistered. That's what I'm trying to say, Aaron. Yeah, it is Aaron, isn't it? Sorry.
It is, yes, yeah, yeah.
Mm. And I'd come in a bit late and didn't get you to start with the start of it. But, well done for the work you do.
Thank you.
I have got a friend down here I'm very close to, John Evans. He's another owner, John. Lives in Honiton, around that area, I think it is. Honiton, you probably know him, I expect.
Yes, I know John, yeah.
It's
wonderful as well. Sorry, I was going to say, David, it's wonderful that you're raising awareness of guide dogs as well. That's another great charity that we work closely together. But it's, as I said in the bit that I did, it's about working with others across the sector, whether that's through the veteran sector or through the sight loss or disability sectors. And it's really building up those partnerships, because we can't all do it. We can't do everything. So it's,
I've heard you previously say about this statue where people on each other's been led. And that was really, you probably know, that was really the start of guide dogs.
Oh, okay, right, yeah. Yeah, and I guess the guiding skills,
The guiding skills. And, of course, the Braille was developed from the war as well by Louis
it
Braille.
It was, that's right, yes. Yeah, and
trenches, and it sparked it off with this Louis Braille, that let's design Braille for people that can't see.
Yeah, and there was a Braille watch as well, wasn't there? Which I think when St Dunstaners first became members, they were given a Braille watch, something as at the time was very advanced in technology, but was very effective and helped that person to feel a bit more sort of normal.
Well, we've progressed a bit more now. We've got.
Well, we have. Yeah, we have a bit. Yeah.
Absolutely. The phone, well, not, I'll stop talking now and let someone else.
Thank you, David. Thanks for your comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming along and enlightening. Certainly
thank you.
What Blind Vets are all about. Yeah.
Aaron, it's Graham again here. The important thing here is that I see this about us having an armory of knowledge. So David might not be a veteran, but he will bump into other people. And
absolutely.
He can share the news. And, we had, it's rather terrible. You may have heard of Esmeray's umbrella and Charles Bonnet syndrome and people having visual hallucinations. Mm. That isn't accepted by the whole of the medical world. And there are people living in torment, thinking that they're seeing things that aren't there. Mm. And for me, the fact that we have, like you, recently had a talk from Esmeray's umbrella, we can share that news. You can have we can refer people into services. That's brilliant. Our USP, I suppose, as a charity, is that we help people navigate their journey. So everybody's different, but we ask everybody who registers with us, are you a blind veteran?
So it means that
we refer, people into you really early on when they've registered with us, so that they're getting the maximum cement.
Absolutely,
support.
And get. And again, that support at that time where it's a very difficult time, isn't it? When you're first diagnosed, and it's important to put those support mechanisms in place at that key time.
And you're right. I've experienced it myself. This Charles Bonnet syndrome, and it is quite frightening when it kicks off. I was really scared that something was really terribly wrong with me, and I've had it several times over the past probably 10 years now. Anyway, I'm going to stop. Let someone else come in now.
Thanks, David. Thanks, David, for your observations. Let's open the floor up to somebody else. Let's see who's there.
It's Les. Can I come in?
Of course you can, Les.
Hey, Les.
Good morning, Aaron, and thank you very much for your presentation.
No problem. Thank you, Les.
I was going to ask something that we've been involved, Devon Insight, in relation to trying to create a sight-friendly county in Devon. And one of the things that I think is a huge step amongst many is the awareness that people have who aren't visually impaired in everyday service provision, or whether it's pavement furniture, whether it's how you're treated in a shop, how you're dealt with over a telephone, where a lot of organisations now are governed by the computer programs that they have in place, and they have quite a rigid service, etc. Have you found that some of the problems you may be getting and that your people may be experiencing when you've put in the support and the time and the effort with the people that you're dealing with, that when they actually go out into the big bad world, so to speak, that there are people perhaps in transport and in areas that they come across who aren't really aware of the problems that people with disabilities have, particularly sight loss, and that there is a really quite a huge gap in education that could perhaps be filled late at school, you know, whether somebody like in America, the great thing is people go for a month and they get points towards education by working in a hospital or working in a different sector or doing something non-medical. But as an observer, do you think that there are things that we could do to expand that? And have you suffered yourself, your group and organization from that shortfall?
Yeah, absolutely, we have. Yeah, and it's all well and good us providing the support and the skills to our membership, but it's as you say, it's the awareness of people outside of that sector or suffering with that disability. But yes, we have experienced it, and we have been involved in all sorts of campaigns quite recently around the thing that's quite high on everybody's agenda at the moment, which is around the trains and the ticket office closures, how that's impacting on disabled and people with visual impairments. Been involved with other VI sector partners about campaigning against that. But we've also experienced it in all sorts of things like taxi drivers not allowing guide dogs into their taxis. Or into restaurants, that sort of thing. It's a real challenge, and unfortunately, there is an awful lot of bad practice out there that for people that are not aware of disability and sight loss really impacts on people that are suffering with it. We've also experienced it in hospitals, where our members have gone in and the staff within there have not realised that they are visually impaired. So, as you can imagine, someone comes along and plonks their dinner in front of them, doesn't realise they're visually impaired. That visually impaired person doesn't know that their food is there, so it goes without. So at the moment, we're trying to work on something on a national basis to provide something very simple around identifying that person as visually impaired, so that anybody, whether it's hospital porters, nurses, doctors, whoever, can see that quite clearly that they are visually impaired. So there's a lot of challenges, a lot of work to do, and I hope that we are working in partnership with others to try and iron out some of these issues. But there's an awful lot to do, unfortunately, Les.
Yeah, what surprises me is that when you start looking into the financial sector or the financial aspect, the disability economy is worth billions. Mm-hmm. And I find it really extraordinary listening to the bleating that we hear on a daily basis about business this and Wilco and companies going to the wall, when there's this huge reservoir of the disability economy, and people seem to be very, very reluctant to see the potential and the possibilities and the benefits to both areas, whether it's the supplier and or the user, because I'm a great believer in the technology, which you've already touched on with Graham, in that you do get a little bit of resistance in the beginning. But once people start to appreciate the benefits that can come, and we hear it ourselves from our own members when they first come to a group, and then months later, they're using readers, they're using smartphones, the specific function on it, not everything, but can actually be life-changing. And it's really strange to think that this wealth and this economy is out there, but it seems to be ignored.
It is, and there is sadly an awful lot of people that would benefit from it. So yeah, I don't know why companies, organisations aren't really tapping into that and trying to do something that would benefit not only their bottom line, but also to the wider society, do something positive. Yeah.
It's Gray again here. Can I just share some information about the train station ticket offices?
Yeah.
Those of you who were on the Chit Chat call, I think it was last week or the week before, I read the letter that I had written to the Prime Minister, the Minister for Transport, and the Secretary of State. Well, I've received a letter back from the Minister of State for Transport, and very nice letter and really good. And what I'm going to do is we're going to reproduce that letter in full in the Winter Magazine, just so that we can hold these people to account, because they're basically saying there won't be a problem, of course. And I think we all accept that there's going to be change. The world is always evolving, always changing. What I kind of like is that he's put in black and white what we can expect as a community moving forward. And I'm going to produce it, an exact copy of the letter in the magazine, so that we can hold him to account as we move forward.
Fantastic.
Aaron, let's just see if there's another question for you.
I was just going to say, this is Sarah, that a lot of people are unaware of the meaning of a white stick. Young people, and especially foreigners. I've spoken to a foreign driver on the bus and asked him where I should be put off to go to my meeting, the consultant. And he just waved his arm and said, there's a sign up over there. And I said, well, I'm afraid I can't see it. I said, could somebody take me across the road? And I said, I can't see. And a lot of people are unaware of the meaning of a white stick these days.
Again, can I come in? It's Graham here. Just because it's another piece of work we've done. So earlier in the year, we did a piece of work with Devon County Council. And one of the aspects of that was a bus driver training for public and community bus drivers. And surprise, surprise, we had a really good uptake from community buses, but not very good uptake from the very well-known bus companies. And basically they're saying, look, they're short-staffed and they haven't got the time to release people for training. Now, as part of that training, which was broadly about disability, but there was a section on sight loss, we've actually done an explanation of visors, VI badges, all the types of white stick, whether that be a symbol cane or a guide, a guide cane, and also the ones with red visible strips on to show that somebody might have a dual sensory impairment. Now, we've just received in the office 2,500 training manuals, and those training manuals are going to be distributed to every public and community bus driver in Devon. And there are training videos and whatever, and that's all on our website as well. So I'm hoping that over the next few months, we will start to see a change from that service provision across the county. There will always be an ignorant bus driver, as the same as there's an ignorant member of the public. But if we can start changing attitudes a little bit, I think that would be really good. So that's what we're doing at the moment with bus drivers.
That's great.
Sorry, Graham. Dave. Could I just come in quickly? Sorry, I know I've had a chat, but unless someone else wants to put a question in. What I've found over many years of being visually impaired, I've gone through all the canes, symbol, rollerball, etc., etc. But once I got my guide dog, people are much more aware that you've got sight loss.
Yeah.
You get the odd idiot that might say, oh, are you training a dog? No, not. I'm not training. It's my dog and I'm visually impaired. But I do find the dog has made such a change to my life. Independently, I know I harp on about guide dogs because they're very close to my heart. They give me a wonderful dog for nothing, and I'm paying them back with all the work I do for them. But the dog is more recognisable. People, you're right. What Sarah said: people don't always understand what this blinking white cane is. You know, but you get a dog, I tell you, they recognise a guide dog. There's no question about that. Yeah. I'll tell you what, just quickly. I got a thing about disabled toilets. Now, in my local pub down there, Wetherspoons, Powder Monkey and Exmouth, there was a terrible situation yesterday. There was about four of us queuing up for this. They've now called it an access toilet rather than a disabled toilet. We have a key for it, a radar key. We're waiting outside this toilet yesterday. It's really bugging me, this. And I don't know what's going on, whether the bloke had passed away and what, but I eventually found out that I had to leave my dog with somebody and go upstairs to the toilet. And this bloke, I was told, comes out and he's been doing all this washing in there. He's had a strict bloody wash and walks out with a bare chest. And, you know, why don't the staff sort this out? He shouldn't be in there doing all that. He's holding four people up that have all got disabilities of a sort, including me. And I just don't get it at all. You know, the staff should, I'd have jumped on that as a staff member. I'd have jumped straight on that and said, oi, you, over here, I want a word with you. You're not to be using that to do your bloody washing in, mate, and everything else. You're holding everybody else up that's disabled from going into the toilet. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I'll stop harping on about disabled toilets. I've really got a thing about them. You know, people misusing them that are perfectly capable of going to the other toilets for people.
Do you know what the law says, David?
Yeah, go on.
The law says that accessible toilets are accessible to anybody.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
You don't have to have a registered disability, be visually impaired or anything. They're actually accessible to anybody. And it's one of the things we talk about on the training, because on our training with the bus drivers, a lot of it is about hidden disabilities. And, you know, we don't know what situation that guy was in. He could have been living on the street. He could have been an ex-veteran. Know where to live, and he was washing his clothes. So, you know, everybody's got a story. But I do agree with you. There are people using these toilets who perhaps shouldn't.
I quite agree with you. And I'm very quick to come forward and tell them about it as well, believe me.
It's good for you.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting down to the last few minutes. Aaron, I would just like to thank you for your support today with us at Devon Insight, but you've been supporting us for many years now, as has Phil. A lot of people will know Phil as well.
Yeah.
You support our community events, our Living Well with Sight Loss events, and you will be at our conference, which is coming up in October.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who've received either the audio, print, or digital version of the magazine, InVision magazine, our conference is on Friday the 20th of October. And, yeah, those of you who are voting members of the charity will be receiving a bespoke invitation shortly and proxy forms if you'd like to vote in the meeting. As I say, all the speakers are covered in the InVision magazine, but if you want any information or to book your place, just give us a call in the office on the helpline number. Let's just talk about the next speaker event.
Great, Tess, before you go on, I would just like to say something to Aaron, if I may, please.
Go on.
Aaron, I sing in a choir, and one of my choir members has a son who was a veteran, or is a veteran, and was in need of support up in Lancashire. And I said I would speak with the chappie on the phone because parents didn't want to get involved because the son was in crisis. So I did speak with the son, and I have to tell you just how amazing blind veterans have been for him in Lancashire. The whole service of liaising with his sensory team, with the rehabilitation officer, as well as his GP, as well as blind vets, all became involved, and they set up like a group meeting where they shared and pooled their information for the benefit of this young man, and he is a young man, to the degree that he's now looking at getting back into work. So I think his age is about 43, 44. But I just wanted to tell you that how well that service was received.
So on behalf
of the family, thank you so much.
Well, it's lovely to hear. Thank you, Tess. And I'm glad we could support. And that's what we try to do.
Yes.
I can harp on and say how amazing the charity is. I know I work for them, so I'm biased. But as I said right at the start, the reason why I joined Blind Veterans was it's just a fantastic charity, and the work that I've seen us do has been phenomenal. So thank you for sharing that story, and I'm glad that he's getting the support that he needs. And long may our support continue for him.
Absolutely. But,
No, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Can I share details now of our next speaker event? It's on Tuesday, the 10th of October. Globe Trotting with George Jones, a blind man's adventures around the world. Despite being severely visually impaired, George set himself the challenge of visiting 30 countries before his 30th birthday. George shares his inspirational tales of visiting countries like Alaska, Iceland, and New Zealand. So George is a client of Devon in Sight. He wouldn't mind me saying that. That should be something a little bit different. So hope you can join us on Tuesday, the 10th of October. Aaron, once again, thank you very much. It's 11:31. We need to finish.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.